Hey, this is Russell, and I work at the video store, the place that you can go to every week when it's movie night. On days like today, we have our interesting customers pop in to rent something. We talk about the exciting things that they have going on in their lives, and we're always keen to hear what films that they've loved across their life. All right, let's do it. Let's open up the shop. How's it?
Good morning, Russ.
How are you, my G-Force?
I'm good, dude.
Are you strong?
Yeah.
Good. I'm strong.
Nice.
Welcome to the video store. Thank you for wandering in to our lovely video store here. We've got lots of movies and series on the shelves. I'm joined by my good chummy G-Force, Graham G-Force Hackney.
Hello.
Who is an editor. We're not producing and working behind the counter here. And my name is Russell. I am the owner of The Bioscope, which is an independent cinema here in Johannesburg. Mm-hmm. Usually it's just us behind the counter.
Yes.
That's a typical video store episode. And today is something a little special, however.
Yeah.
We've got ourselves a guest episode.
So, yes, we do.
So every now and again we like to have a guest episode. This is when an interesting person who comes into our video store pays us a visit, and we go through their career, their what they're up to, the films that they've loved, and ultimately we're just trying to find them something to rent.
Yeah.
That's all we need.
Nice.
So today on the show we've got Vian Vandenberg coming in. This is a real interesting dude. I've followed him for years. I've been amazed at his success. He is one of the new kinds of creatives in the world.
Yes.
In the sense that he is someone who is making a career out of being a content creator.
Yeah.
What makes him interesting and unique in terms of what his content often entails, it's the idea of magic.
Yes.
And performing magic in public spaces. And it's just so cool to see a local hero in that sense. We see a lot of stuff from around the world. So it's very cool to see a South African get this kind of success.
Yeah.
I'm fascinated by it.
Cool.
I'm now 40 years old, and so much of the kind of social media real might and power has been a little bit lost on me.
Yes.
So I'm always curious to know how this works, how one can make a career out of it.
Mm.
And I also just hope that anyone joining now who is unfamiliar with us can enjoy this episode to perhaps get a different side of Vian. That's our hope, is that you would hear this chat and it would just be flavored by film and TV.
Exactly.
And the stuff that he has loved across his life or is enjoying right now as a way to talk more about him. So our hope is that we unlock something that you don't know about him and that this is a nice and interesting chat. For those people who are joining for the first time, as we said, the majority of our episodes are us just behind the counter, talking uninterrupted about the film and the TV that we're loving. A good opportunity to hear what that's like is to please stick around after the chat.
Yeah.
Myself and Graham, I want to catch up with you about some things.
Cool.
There's been some trailers, which I'm very excited about.
Okay, cool.
To talk about. And one or two really cool films that are coming up.
Cool. And the Emmys happened.
Yeah. Okay. And we can talk about some of those. Some of those winners.
Yes.
Oh, and another lovely thing to mention up front here for everyone is, as I said, I'm the owner of The Bioscope.
Yeah.
So we've got the cinema that we can screen movies in.
Yep.
We talk about movies all the time, and sometimes you want to just watch them.
Yes.
So we have carved out this very cool special screening event.
Mm-hmm.
Here at The Bioscope called The Video Store Presents.
Yes.
And this is our chance to bring out the movies that some of us know and really love and that perhaps other members of the team haven't seen.
Yeah.
And this is our chance to all get together in a room and watch these movies.
Mm.
So, with the sequel to Spinal Tap out and about, unfortunately not in South African cinemas.
That's a bummer.
Although, to be honest, I'm hearing that mixed reviews about the sequel, and there's a whole argument that one could have in a platform like this about legacy sequels. There's no question that the original Spinal Tap is a fucking masterpiece and a timeless classic. So we are going to get together to watch the original This Is Spinal Tap on Tuesday, the 23rd of September at 8 p.m. Remember, the next day is a public holiday.
Nice.
So that is why we are doing this at 8 o'clock on a Tuesday night.
Awesome.
But yeah, if you can show us by the time you get to the counter at the Bioscope that you are subscribing to our podcast, you get yourself a free popcorn.
Oh, yeah.
And then we have ourselves a fun hang.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's such a fun movie.
Yeah,
so
it is.
It's going to be a good night. All right, so tickets available at thebioscope.co.za.
Mm-hmm.
But that is Tuesday, the 23rd of September.
Perfect.
All right. But I think let's waste no more time.
Yeah.
Cool. Let's get into it. This is Vian popping in to rent something. How's it?
Been good. How have you been?
I'm good, man. It's nice to finally, finally have you on the show.
Yeah, we met a couple of times, hey, and I think it was time to finally sit down and have a chat.
It was very cool to spot you in the halls of Comic-Con.
Yeah.
And of course, it's one of those cases where I know you because I've seen your face. And of course, you don't know who I am. So I gave you a quick pitch, and then we've been staying in touch for what is, I think, now almost 2 years.
Yeah, I think that was 2023, yeah.
Yeah. So. To have you on the show, because I'm completely fascinated by you. I am intrigued by what you've created for yourself. I'd love to understand that. I'd love to go through that. And we've got a lovely way of doing it here at the video store, which is to go through your life and to go through the films that you've loved across your life, because I want to see how The Magician got created.
Yeah.
But firstly, you've never come to the Bioscope before? This is your first time in 44 Stanley?
My first time ever here. Like, I thought when I saw it the first time online, I thought I know where it is.
Yeah.
Turns out I was completely wrong. But I love it. Like, awesome place you guys got here. You're in a really nice space as well.
Thanks, man.
So, y'all, I think this will be my last stop here. So, yeah.
Lovely. And where are you based? Pretoria?
Yeah, I'm originally from the Free State in a small town. I stay Waterkloof site now in Pretoria, yeah.
Okay, so we grew up in Bloem. Free State?
Yeah. No, small town.
Not even Bloem.
No. Everyone thinks that. You know what? That's so interesting. Like, when I just started, yeah. I was only doing, like, in-person performances before the whole social media thing took over. And it was, like, the most difficult thing was getting shows in Joburg, which was just an hour and a half from me. Because everyone would book me in Bloemfontein. And I kept telling them, like, guys, I know I'm in the Free State, but, like, I'm so close to Joburg.
You're actually more closer to Joburg. What was the little town?
Frankfurt.
Okay.
It's close to, I don't know if you know the town, Villiers.
Yeah, Villiers. Sure.
Yeah, close to there.
I love how there's almost every major city in the world has a little town in South Africa.
Yes.
Like, there's Frankfurt, there's Bethlehem, there's Amsterdam, there's all these, like, little towns. And I'm always convinced, I made a joke, because I'm in a band and we've traveled to some of these small little towns. I'm convinced that there's little kids that grow up in Bethlehem, in the Free State, believing that that's where fucking Jesus came from.
I think that's really what
their parents believe. And their parents aren't telling them otherwise. And so they just think, like, this is where Jesus came from.
My oldest brother has a son, and we his nickname, we call him Billy.
Okay.
And there was a festival in their hometown, which was close to us in Reitz, and it was called the Billy Millie Festival. I think to this day he believes it was, like, literally named after him. So I guess yeah.
Okay, but now I think the best way to kick this off is, you're a magician. How do you introduce yourself at a dinner party?
So it's interesting because I kind of went into this whole online thing. But before that, I was doing magic, right? But I never wanted to really be seen as a magician.
Yeah, that's
right?
Why I'm kind of carefully asking.
Go ahead.
Which, like, is, sometimes you got one, 10 seconds at a dinner party. I'm like, hey, Vian, what do you do?
Yeah, well, what I usually say is, I make content. I make videos. And then usually I get into the conversation of how everything started, because it's transitioned into so many different things. Originally, I did magic tricks at school because I thought, okay, this is cool and I love it and it's my hobby and it's my passion. And then getting onto social media with, obviously, the magic tricks. The thing is, I always wanted to present myself as a normal guy who does magic. But with that, the more magic you post, eventually people are going to put 2 and 1 together and be like, this guy's a magician. which is fine. I actually had my name on TikTok and Instagram be Vian Magic, right?
Yeah.
The reason I did that, you know, like you would get Kurt Darren music.
Yeah, sure, right? Sure.
That's why I did that.
Yeah, the band that I'm in, we had to find a handle that worked, and so we had Short Straw Band.
Yeah, so then everyone started calling me Vian Magic. Okay. Now I've obviously accepted that,
okay,
but it was never intentional, so I removed the magic. Then I heard people started calling me just Vian. A lot still do the Vian Magic. But man, whatever you want. Like I don't care about if people say I'm a magician. I am. I mean, I do magic tricks. But yeah, I think the main thing, I guess, is the content that I do.
Okay.
But yeah, content creator / magician / whatever you want, influencer, whatever it is.
What I'm fascinated in, and I would love to just track this journey, because this is the beauty of a podcast, is that we got the time to do this.
Mm.
Is how we go from the little town of Frankfurt to like millions of followers. Not tens of thousands, not hundreds of thousands, millions. I think that's fascinating to me.
Yeah, man.
Instagram is like over
2.2.
What's the main platform? TikTok?
On TikTok, I'm at 16 million. The main one that I earn from is YouTube, which is at 6.8 million now.
It's astounding, man.
Yeah. No, man, look.
Like, yeah, I think a lot of it is also lovely timing, that I think you were just producing lots of stuff as these platforms grew and changed and existed.
Yeah.
Like, I've just seen I'm old enough to see the evolution of Instagram, where when it started, it was very much a photographer's platform. Mm. And it was quite a purist photographer's platform where, you know, you would have to say, like, this doesn't have a filter. I didn't put a filter on this.
Yeah.
And there was Instagram walks. And then it was about challenging the photo that you took. But it was all about photos. And it was all about photography. And then there was this point where Instagram just, it was like they got let off a leash. And it was like, no, this is a TV channel now. And it's not about photography. And so anyone who was producing good content in those moments just had the opportunity to explode.
For me, I believed in Instagram. I remember telling my brother, we have to find this person's Instagram so we can use them in the video. And he said, no, ask for their Facebook, because no one has Instagram. Yeah. That's what he said to me at that time. So it just started taking off. And yeah, look, the guys I looked up to were in the US and the UK. I saw them going viral with their videos, of course. And I thought, let me give this a go. There was no such thing as an influencer back then. There was no content creators or anything. Yeah. I just went with it. I just decided, you know, we got on a bus. We decided to make our first videos. I've already been spending years of my life learning magic tricks and doing it at school and at parties or whenever we have a braai or something. And then I decided, let me try these videos, because these guys are going viral. They're seeing the world. They're making all this money. I posted that first video. And my first video that I really put effort into, it got 16 million views.
Jesus.
It was crazy. And I remember they...
What was the trick?
It was a compilation. Okay. So I saw that if you're on a beach and you do magic tricks and you make a compilation of it, because already then people started seeing that people don't have like a long attention span on social media. So you had to be quick. So I would do one trick after the other. I posted that video. I remember it got 40,000 views. And then, you know, the next day it had 80,000. It just kept growing until it was at 16 million within like, I think, a month. And that's when I saw, wow, this is big. 2 years later, I hopped onto TikTok. Just posting the same videos, built that to the biggest following in Africa at that stage.
Oh, shit.
Which was just 1.3 million, I believe. And yeah, fast forward, it went to 16 million. Now I post on obviously all the platforms and stuff. And yeah, it's been a wild ride. There's been TV shows that I've done. It's been three now. One has been a kid's show.
Yeah.
So I never know when someone comes up to me and they're like, Vian, I'm a fan, can I get a photo? And then I think like I'm this cool social media guy, and they're like, I watch you on that kid show, and I'm like, that's not me. And then
there's nothing wrong with it. I actually wouldn't even call him a magician. He was an entertainer, and there are these videos of me like in the 90s, 80s, late 80s, early 90s at my birthday party, and this like doing his thing, and you know, he put on this great show, and he was like a good quality northern suburbs Joburg entertainer. He did my like niece and nephew a couple of years ago. Like, the dude's like, there's a whole business for it, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that. No, but it's exciting to see all the things that you can do. So we're going to track it, and we're going to go through it, because I want to
go ahead. No, please.
I want to go through. But before we get into the whole journey, is there something that you returning to our video store? What have you, is there something that you've watched recently that we can talk about?
So I recently watched a movie I watched back when I was in grade 12, which is The Wolf of Wall Street.
Okay.
Because I actually loved it quite
a lot. You rewatched it recently?
I rewatched it literally this week.
Okay.
It's a funny thing. Like, I often don't watch movies. Okay. But when I say that to people, they think I don't like movies. I love movies. Like, I love a good movie. Yeah. To me, it's rare to find one that I watch one TV series probably a year. I watch Squid Games this year. I think that's good.
So you pick one and you're like, this is going to be my show for the year.
Then I wait for the next thing. A lot of stuff just feels like filler to me, but there's been many movies over the years that I love a good movie.
Okay.
But then it has to be good.
Yeah, Wolf of Wall Street is a great thing to talk about, because obviously there was this real life experience from Jordan Belfort.
Hmm.
Belfort, hey?
Yes.
And obviously he heightened it for his own book, just for the sake of the book.
Yes.
And the book obviously did really well. Then, of course, the movie heightens that and takes license even further. So you got like this kind of exaggeration of an exaggeration. But it's cool that he still sort of has some kind of a career for himself. I know the woman, funny enough, the woman who is the real life inspiration of Margot Robbie, the Duchess, she's also in the wake of the film come out and built somewhat of a career for herself.
I didn't know that.
To say, you know, I'm the Duchess. I'm the woman who inspired it all. So it's interesting how it all works. But what do you love about Wolf of Wall Street?
Well, I think, you know, at a young age, I already kind of had this fascination with, I would say, becoming successful.
Yeah.
And of course, the movie doesn't do it in the most legal ways. But I mean, you know, there's a lot of motivational scenes that I remember to this day. I remember, you know, where Leonardo DiCaprio obviously stands on the stage and he's like, are you a worthless loser? They'd pick up the phone and start dialing.
Yeah.
And I mean, that stuff, it always motivated me, because, you know, when I was in a small town, the stuff I had to believe in, it kind of, you know, having to go outside of my comfort zone, making these videos, chasing this career, I think those things really like pushed me. Not like just this movie specifically, but, you know, you need that bit of motivation. And I always felt like, especially Hollywood movies, like it would feel like it's kind of showing me the world that I'm missing, because I'm just in this small town.
Yeah.
But John, I think what I loved is the whole idea of someone starting from nothing. So I kind of feel like that way about what's the movie, The Greatest Showman.
Yeah.
So like also this guy who started with literally nothing and then he ends up in this big thing. Because I've always related to that, because I felt like that, right?
No,
I felt like I'm like in this small space. And yeah, the movie was just motivational for me. I truly, it's purely motivational. And also it was a really good movie. Like there's a lot of, I love comedy movies.
Yeah.
That one I wouldn't say was a comedy movie, but there were a lot of...
No, it very much was.
Yeah.
And that was definitely the flavor throughout the movie was this idea of it being just so comical.
Yes.
Okay, so our first one, we've got The Four Great Loves, which are the films that you've loved across your life. And the point of going through this is that we think that the films that you've loved have made you who you are in some shape or form.
Yeah.
And it says a lot about you. So my hope is that for folks who have seen a lot of your videos and know you, they might learn a little bit more about you and sort of get a bit better of a picture. So let's imagine this little Vian rolling through Frankfurt. Your first film is your puppy love film, which is the first film that came to you. You say it's superhero movie.
Yeah, do you know superhero movie?
Is that like a sort of parody?
Yeah, man, look, I know people think like it's the corniest thing, but that was, I think, 2007. So I was around, I think, 12 years old. I just loved it.
Just do like, a quick maths for me. When were you born?
95. Yeah. Okay. So I watched that movie and I just thought it's hilarious. Like all those types of movies, you know, like the airplane movies?
Yeah, sure. That,
yeah.
No, and of course you've got Naked Gun that's sort of recently been rebooted now, but it was really not another teen movie. It was like the first of those like modern parody films.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, well, for me at least. And that was Chris Evans, you know, who went on to be Captain America. But that was the first one. And then that did really well. Same as like Scary Movie.
Yes,
were those kind of like newer modern parodies, and then all these others just came.
Yeah, I don't know what it was. At the time, it just, it was good because I was massively into Spider-Man.
Okay.
I guess as a child, I have to say Spider-Man, like that, the one with Tobey Maguire.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because I have I have this photo which my mom has in our house where I was, she made me a whole Spider-Man costume.
Yeah, of course.
And I was crawling on the tiles outside.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we would flip the photo so it would look like it's me on a wall. But it just looks like me on a on the floor because you can see her in the back.
But there's the start of magic. Whose idea was that? Your mom or you?
That was my idea. Luckily,
so your brain was already working in that.
I'm telling you, like
in that way.
For some reason, from a young age, and I only realized that like later in life, like you can ask any of my childhood friends. Like I was just obsessed with things. Like if it was Spider-Man, I had to dress up like Spider-Man. I had to be Spider-Man. I would run outside and act out an entire movie, I guess.
Sure, I mean, it's a little bit of a sort of compulsiveness. It's a very healthy disorder.
Yeah, I think.
But it shows that you understand how much work and effort you got to put into something.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I was also, as a kid, massively into WWE. And okay. I would like, I mean, I'm not telling kids to do this at all, but I jumped off ladders.
Yeah.
Right. Like it's probably where all the back pains come from.
Okay.
And me and my friends would wrestle. Like I just always, and magic was the one thing I think that stuck.
Yeah.
And making videos and I always just, I don't know, I just wanted something that would like take over my whole life if I got interested in it. Spider-Man, even as a kid, like it just, that's, I cared so, you know, every action figure, like the clothes that I wanted, the costume, everything, and my mom just made it. But yeah, that was a movie that kind of, I would say, took over my childhood.
Cool. I would say it's probably more Spider-Man then.
Yeah, I think the thing with superhero movies is it just the comedy aspect of it.
Okay.
Like, I love that. Like, I love a good comedy movie. It's just...
So, something I can rent for you today based on this is the work of the guy who made those Spider-Man movies. So, the guy who made the Tobey Maguire ones is a guy called Sam Raimi, who made super, super interesting stuff.
Okay.
And this, when he got handed Spider-Man, that was him, like, you know, doing the big leagues and doing the big budget stuff. But his earlier stuff is very cool. He made Evil Dead, which are these, like, zombie horror films. There was Evil Dead, which was, like, a super, super, super cheap one. And then he did Evil Dead 2, which was kind of like like him going back on the original to try and make it better.
Okay.
Because he now had learned more and had understood more. Army of Darkness. There's lots of cool inventive stuff that Sam Raimi has done. So it's worth you looking into the guy who made those Spider-Man movies.
I think so too, because the thing that I liked about that, even looking back to it now, I might be biased because that's the one I watched as a child.
Yeah.
What I loved about those movies, it was very much about the story.
Sure.
So it was you really felt for this guy. It wasn't just all the stuff happening.
Well, that was what was so good about the Christopher Nolan Batman films for me.
Oh, okay.
Is that like The Dark Knight was this kind of like heist thriller. It just happened to have a dude in a costume in the corner.
Yes.
But like,
it wasn't all about that. Yeah.
It wasn't about that. It was like, there were big stakes. It was heist. There was thriller. There was drama. There was stakes. There was intrigue.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
Yeah, you really felt with Spider-Man like it's more this guy in his grandma's house in their little backyard. Yeah. They didn't really see him as this huge superhero. I think they did that very well. So I'll definitely look into that.
No, sure. So I'm gonna rent those for you so you can walk away with Evil Dead now. Okay, how long did we stay in Frankfurt?
Gee, I grew up there.
Okay.
My parents moved from...
I'm assuming there wasn't a cinema, sorry.
No, not at all.
Okay, was there a video store?
There was.
Did you rent stuff?
There was a very nice one, though.
Okay, cool.
But funny, because there's not a lot of nice stores there. But sure, I mean...
I'd imagine that video store like held a big place in the town.
It did.
Because it was pre... I think some folks had like Mnet and a bit of DSTV, but like... That was probably your version of a cinema.
Yes. And they were like, the thing is, this is the thing you do on a weekend. You go with your family, you go there, you look at all the latest movies on a DVD, and you rent it.
Yeah.
And there were two. One was very big, and the other one was like the local one, the one that's like our childhood.
Okay.
But eventually, you know, it just became something else, which is very sad. It held on for long.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean,
is anyone still in the town? Do you go back? Are your folks still
there? I do go back. My parents still live there.
Okay.
And yeah, it's always got a lot of memories for me. Growing up in a small town, you know, your world is just like so big. Like, it's funny because you're in this small place, but you're also fascinated with everything on the outside.
Okay. I remember your imagination.
Yes.
Big. Okay.
So I remember going to Cape Town. I would see people walk with their dogs, riding their bikes, and I thought that was insane. Like, whoa, these people have these cool lives. And that always drove me. That was like, I have to get out of this town. Like, I love it. Yeah. But at the same time, I was like, there's a bigger world than this.
Yeah.
But I stayed there from around, from when I was born till 25. Okay. So a good quarter of a century. I stayed my whole life there.
Over into high school. Was that in the town?
Yeah. So our high school and our, what do you call it, primary school. Is all in one.
Okay.
So it's one school. It's a very nice school. So I was very fortunate.
It's an all in one.
Yes.
Interesting. That makes sense.
Yeah. It's so small.
There's no need for.
Exactly.
So you probably had these friends that you just kept the whole time. There was never like the opportunity to kind of reset.
Yeah.
Which is a pretty helpful thing to have happen in high school, where you're like, you can ditch the friends that were always a problem. You can make some new friends.
I hear you.
You can kind of reinvent yourself. But I guess you can't do that.
Yeah, it's funny you say that, because I always thought when I was a kid, like, moving schools has to be the coolest thing. Because I thought, like, that's when you get like this clean start. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
no one knows. But no. I stayed in the same school my whole life. Okay. I was more like the shy kid in school.
Okay.
So it's interesting to me now when people come up to me, it's people who were in my school, and they're like, how do you go on these stages? Like, I could never. And I'm like, don't you remember like how quiet I was and stuff? So I just think like those are things you learn with time.
It's definitely a muscle.
Yeah.
And I had a lot of experience through the Bioscope, but also with the band once again, where you start playing to no one. And those crowds thankfully get bigger and bigger till you're actually quite used to standing in front of thousands of people.
Yeah.
You use your instrument, and in your case it would be your planned performance. And you can use that. It's not just like you just standing there kind of figuratively naked. But you definitely get used to it.
Yeah, I mean, so you can imagine for me, right, growing up in a small town, being the most quiet kid in my classroom, to now, you know, be on stages, be on the TV and all that stuff, and having to go to someone at a table and say, hey, pick a card, and it's like the CEO. You just have to do it, like you just said. It made me question, like, you know, what is an introvert? Because I said to my girlfriend this, it's reached a point where I was like, I don't even know if I believe it. Because for me, it felt like if you take the most popular guy in a rugby team and he's like Mr. Charisma and you put him between a bunch of software engineers, he'll stand in the corner and not know what to do. And then he becomes the introvert.
Yeah.
So I said to her, it's like you learn these people's skills over time and then you kind of change your behaviors. I don't know. So for me, that's what I realized, because it happened in my life. It like completely changed from the one to the other.
Yeah.
So
my definition of that is what brings you joy and where are you comfortable? I have no problem standing in the lobby of the Bioscope and saying hi and chatting to anyone. I find it fascinating.
Yes.
That someone could walk in and they've got a foreign accent. Where are you from? Oh, what's that city like? And we chat, or I tell them about the Bioscope. I feed off that.
Yeah.
Some days I'm like, fuck, just leave me alone.
That's what I'm saying.
When I went into COVID, I actually had made this joke of like, I think I've got hermit lust as opposed to wanderlust. I just want to be left alone. But after 2 weeks, I was like, oh, I need people.
Mm.
That's my battery. It's like a solar panel. I need to talk and have these kinds of interactions. So I think that's the thing. If you were craving connection and craving the ability to connect to people, then that makes you an extrovert, in my opinion. Whether you've got the skills to do it and the confidence of a stage, that's just, as you said, it's something you learn.
Yeah, it's kind of like I feel like everyone has, in their own way, maybe a bit of both, maybe one of more of the other, because it's the same for me. Like, I get all that excitement from communicating with people, but I think I purely got better at that because of experience and so. But I do enjoy that. Like, same. Like, I enjoy being between. I love talking. That's why I'm on the podcast and so. But at the same time, there were times in my life where I would just be at home, like hiding from the world and not wanting to go out. And that still happens, right? If we get back from like a very busy event.
No, of course. That's just the sort of the stimulation and the fatigue and everything. But I find it interesting that you say your high school crush, which is now the film that you've loved that comes to you in high school, is Pitch Perfect. Because it's exactly what we're talking about here, which is the desire to perform.
Mm.
And I'm sure you saw these people who I think were mostly in high school, hey, the characters?
I think they went to college or something.
They were college students. Yeah. But they were literally and figuratively finding their voice in the movie, right? That's the point, is to sort of have the confidence in your own talent. And so there's no, that's not a coincidence. That's the fact that you loved that film is testament to the fact that something was brewing in you and blossoming in you to perform.
You know,
not necessarily a cappella songs, but in this case, some form of performance.
Well, the more you said that, the more I was like, wow, this is so true. And I'm thinking, like, you should be a therapist. Because
that's what we love doing here. We love unpacking that.
Yeah, the reason behind
it. You sort of wonder which sort of came before the other, but they sort of, it doesn't matter. They came at the same time.
Yeah, because I never thought about that, but now you saying it, it's very, very true. Because, look, I've always had a fascination with popular American music. I don't know why. I just always loved it.
Well, they're very good at sharing it with the world.
Yes. And I that movie like put it together so nicely. I love that it was live, you know, all that stuff. But the reason I'm saying like you hit it right on the spot is because I kind of felt like there was this scene where the guy would come up and he's a magician.
Okay.
And back then I was already doing tricks at school.
Yeah.
And this guy was he was shy. He wanted to get into the cool a cappella team and everything. And then they stopped their super cool show where they're now performing at the big thing. And they made way for him. And he's now part of the team.
Okay.
And then he would walk and he's like, I've got the magic. And that stood out to me because I think, like you're saying, I always wanted to do something big. And I always, you know, in the most non-arrogant way, because like I said, I was like so shy, I couldn't speak to the girls or anything. But I always believed like, you know, I could do something big. Like I have to do something big. I want to be on a stage. I want to have followers and stuff.
Yeah.
To be honest, over the years, like I'm very grateful for the following, but I've kind of realized like, why do I want like a lot of fame, right?
Yeah.
Like I kind of became content with it because I felt like, why do I want the world to know who I am if I'm never even going to know that these people know about me? You know what I mean? So if there's someone sitting in New York and they know who I am, that's nice to know, but I don't know that. You know what I mean?
Okay.
So it reached a point for me where if people come up to me in the street and they ask for a photo, this is what I wanted. Like I always wanted that. I remember when I just finished school, I went on a holiday with my oldest brother and I walked in the one mall and people would walk past us. And I just had this desire that I want these people to one day ask me for a photo. Like I want them to tell me like, I love your tricks. I love your videos. Like you're just good at something.
Yeah.
And I've always had that fascination. But I think, you know, you chase that so much and so much that it reaches a point where you feel like, okay, you know, sometimes you just want to spend quality time with your family.
Sure.
And sometimes you just want to hang out at a festival in your own country, right? Or go on a local podcast or something that I don't have that. Obviously, it would be great. I'm not saying like I don't want that. But going on something like America's Got Talent or Joe Rogan or so, obviously for me, that would be amazing. But I don't think the fame, you can recognize it. You know what I mean?
Okay.
Like it just feels like the people in that country, it would still feel invisible to me if I can't meet every single one of them. Because we were actually in Cape Town, me and my girlfriend. That was the first time when TikTok just boomed. I was very fortunate. I was at the right time. A guy walked up to me and he said he just landed from the US. And he said he watches my videos.
Yeah.
And it happened to us in Japan as well. Mm. So that's when I realized maybe that
we must talk about Japan.
Sure.
I've got a lovely relationship with Japan.
Awesome. Have you been there?
Many times.
Wow.
I'm very lucky.
I've only been there once. I want to go back so badly.
Short Straws toured there many times. So we've gone about 5 times as a band.
That's
I've
insane.
Done some personal trips. So we'll get into that.
Yeah.
But no, I think it also comes down to sort of what you want to be famous for and how you want to be famous. I remember having a distinct feeling that I would love to be the kind of person that if I walked in a room, I remember having this feeling, which I think was perhaps similar to you at a similar time in your life, where I was like, I want to be that kind of guy that walks in a room where one person doesn't know who I am and someone else goes, oh my God, do you have any idea who that guy is?
Yeah.
I thought that was quite an interesting thing, which was to not necessarily just be famous, but I wanted to be like, if you know, you know.
Yes.
And so, you know, obviously with the band, there was a certain amount of like recognizing me from that. But, you know, if recently someone was like, you're the Bioscope guy. And I was like,
yeah, that's
happy
a good
to be
feeling.
The Bioscope guy. That's cool.
I completely agree with you. Like that, you know, people would think like when I say that, like I don't want to come off as egotistical or something, but I mean, we all have that. Like as a child, when you see your favorite rugby player, that aura around them,
sure,
of everyone knowing who they are, it's just such a great feeling. And you want that, right? You want,
yeah, sure.
I also wanted that. I wanted to walk into a place and people know who I am. Maybe I felt like too invisible in school. I don't know.
No, that's most likely a part of it.
Yeah. But now it's like the coolest thing when someone from my school would like send a message and they'll say like, everyone at work showed me a video of you today.
Yeah.
Or I saw you, you know, or releasing a new thing. And then you just feel like, yeah, I guess it's this sense of self-worth. Like, wow, that's how you determine, like, in some way you've made it.
Yeah.
So I've always had that desire as well.
And then I think from here on, as you get older and mature, you'll then develop that. And you'll be like, cool, now I want to be known for a certain thing. Or now that I've achieved certain things, what can I keep going at, or what can I focus on? Because the next love is the film that you could it's Getting Serious is the sort of classification, which is not necessarily university, because we don't all go to university. Did you study after school? Cool. So this is when you're like now crafting yourself as an adult, and you probably at this point starting things. What was the first jobs, or what did you do? How did you sort of transition, or was it because your first video got millions that you just dived straight in?
Well, I'm thinking, if I have to think of one, I think the one I put is The Greatest Showman.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause so for me, when my career just started taking off, which was just after school, I didn't know what I want to do after school.
Sure, like most folks.
It's that question, like you answer it, but you don't know what you're answering, right? And I think most people don't know. And, you know, you kind of feel like you have to have an answer. But I mean, I love doing magic tricks. I love making videos. And it took quite a while to actually take off.
So you were doing that while in high school with just, what, your phone?
Just the videos, no. No.
Okay.
Okay. No. I was. Yeah. Sorry. At about 15, I was already posting on YouTube. But like, I mean,
sure.
I'm standing in my mom's house, too scared to show my face. It's BlackBerry level video.
Yeah.
I'm like, I've got this blur doing card tricks. But yeah, I've been trying it like my whole life. I think that was the way that I could put my magic and my videos out there. But yeah, I think once everything just started taking off, in 2018, I posted my first viral video, compilation that blew up, basically changed my life. In that moment, I got invited to go to Dubai, which is a place I always wanted to see. So me and my brother and our friends would play Minecraft. I was never a big gamer, but we played Minecraft.
Yeah.
And I would build like Dubai, because I was like this. I want to. I was Googling what's the tallest building in Dubai, and I would build it in Minecraft.
It's the Burj Khalifa.
Yes.
Building in the world. I went up it.
Oh.
I went to the very top with my wife's family. It's amazing.
I wanted to do that, but I'm a little scared. Like I was scared of going that high and look, but when I went there, that was the moment I felt like when I was in Dubai, it was like, this is it. Like this is what I wanted.
Yeah.
And everything, I always say it had to be God, because everything happened in that year that I wanted to have happened. And it took so long and suddenly it all happened.
Okay.
And when I was flying back.
You're a religious guy?
Yes, actually. Yeah.
Yeah, that's good.
And then when I was flying back from Dubai, I watched The Greatest Showman on the airplane, and watching the same story that I just went through of this guy making it in showbiz, and then you know it has a special place for me. Yeah.
The moment The Greatest Showman started, which it starts lovely, like any good musical, it starts like on a particularly powerful song point. As that movie starts, I immediately got a lump in my throat. And I was like, oh, I'm going to be inches away from like like tears for the next 2 hours. Yeah. I'm that kid that went to drama school and I did a little bit of acting. It was never to act necessarily. The route was always to get to film school, but performance and being a performer was a big thing for me. So like immediately I was like, I love this. So that's cool that that came to you at that time.
Yeah, just by pure coincidence, right?
And I'd love to get into one question about the magic. I'm curious to know, because all creative things are sort of vaguely the same, be it sort of writing music or writing screenplays or poetry or whatever. With the world of magic, you obviously probably had to start being a bit of a cover band, hey? You sort of had to take other people's or sort of general magic tricks that exist and you learn how they get done and you would master those.
Yes. So there's...
And then was there a fair amount of original planning? Because I'd imagine that's fucking hard to do.
Yeah.
It's the same as being a musician. It's very easy to... Well, it's far easier to play Sweet Home Alabama than it is to write your own Sweet Home Alabama. So where are you with that?
So I think what made magic easier in that sense is if you play an instrument, you can't just wing it, right?
Yeah.
Whereas if you learn a magic trick, nobody ever sees magic tricks. It's very rare. So if you do the magic trick horribly, they're still going to think it's amazing.
Okay.
So what happens in magic, there is kind of like this, you know, it kind of goes the same route as you would if you were in theater or playing an instrument. But the thing is, if you play an instrument, someone else who plays an instrument would instantly know if you can't play that instrument.
Sure.
So I could watch a trick, think of a way to do it, and do it to someone, and they would think it's amazing. So then yeah. I would stick with it. I'd try to figure out different ways. Because, yeah, I didn't go to a place that teaches you how. And by doing that, I was always like, I don't want to perform where there's another magician. Because they might look at me and think, did you watch, did you read Ben Ull's book? Is that how you got into the Ambitious Card? Is that, and then I'm just like, what language is the guy speaking? So that's what, when I decided, like, you know, I just want magic to be cool. Like I have look, I'm not saying like I didn't know anything about it. Like I would fully nerd out over it. I would learn everything I could. But what I'm saying is, when you're doing music or something, there's a right or a wrong way to do it. If I want to learn to play the guitar, and I go on YouTube right now and I watch someone show me step by step, or I watch a video of someone playing Despacito on the guitar, right? Yeah. If I sit there and I pause every second and try to replicate it, it's not going to be like a professional guitar player would play it. But sure. I'd be able to probably do it okay. And that's how I kind of got into magic. And that's how anyone actually gets into magic. You have to kind of analyze it.
No, but it's the same as being a drummer. You learn what's called the rudiments, which is the certain sort of building blocks of what you eventually play. But are you, like, let's just say the last few tricks that you've put out or the last few videos, is that new material that you're writing?
So,
or making it your own? How does it work?
Honestly, it took me years to be original. Like, I was just taking inspo from what everyone else was doing. And then the last while, I started realizing how to be more creative with tricks. So the one thing I did was I made a donut go through a glass, a Krispy Kreme, that blew up. Another thing I did was I took an old trick where people would sit in the air. You've probably seen that. They just sit and there's no chair. And then my brother thought of a way to do it because he's good with, like, I'll just give a hint away, but like with steel.
Sure.
So we were able to do that for the first time without a plate. And I had magicians all over the world message me, how are you doing this? Like there's no plate underneath you.
Yeah.
And we wouldn't tell them. But I mean, that was when I started becoming more original, because there's only a few things you can do. You can really only make something disappear, or you can make something change places, or something go from one place to another. And once you understand that, you look at a McDonald's burger and you're like, okay, what can I do with this? And that's when I started becoming original.
And I'd imagine it's quite an interesting way of looking at the world, sort of different to how other people look at the world. Like you almost have to think backwards.
Yes.
And you sort of have to have the end result and go, well, then how can I work backwards? And if only you know how to do it, then, right? Is that the process,
I'd imagine? I always say, like, you just want to think of, you just need the idea and then you can figure out how to do it.
Yeah.
And I think that fascinates people that don't know anything about how magic works. I always say, like, I spend my whole life being good at something that I'm supposed to hide from people. So they don't know.
Yeah.
They don't know, like, how good are you really? Because, I mean, you've spent all this time learning how to do this thing and then you have to hide it from them. So to them, it looks like you're doing something really cool, but there's actually a lot of hard work behind it. The thing I'm most proud of is I took an apple off of a laptop, like the logo, and made it a real apple. And that was my own trick. And everyone took that. Now, I've also taken a few ideas, of course. You know, no one.
I'm sure you see a lot of people copying you then.
Yes, a lot of the times. And even it never, you know what? It never bothered me because I always felt like my face is still there.
Of course.
But then.
No, and it's a timestamp thing. It's an honor. It's the same as, if other people are covering your songs as a musician.
It's true.
You go, well, I was the guy who wrote it. So.
Yes. I think the only time that it started bothering me was when I was literally making money from the AdSense on YouTube. Because now these people are posting it. Because my repost would also earn a decent amount of money. But now these people were posting it and making money from it themselves. And then people are kind of saturated from mine. But I mean, at the end of the day, I don't believe that. Everyone's like, oh, this person's copying me. It's like, then you probably have to up your game because you're the one producing it. There's no way they can catch you. You're the first one putting out this video. So
how do you feel around that pressure of keeping up? Because, we spoke earlier about Instagram and sort of what Instagram's become.
Yeah.
And if you're just a pretty girl or if you're a certain kind of content producer, it's quite easy. You just got to put on a new bikini. Keep yourself as sort of fit as you can. You don't have to do much, but you've got to do a little bit more.
I think.
And the pressure of that, did that ever get a bit too much for you?
Definitely. I think you always have to look at what you're going to do differently. Because I think when the whole influencer space became a thing, people grew millions of followers.
Yeah.
Now I walk up to those people. They once said to me like, hey, I'm going to have more followers than you. And I would believe them because I'm like, oh, they're working really hard. And now they're just sitting at a regular job, right? Because I understand that because things change. And I think people have to understand that things change. So something that I've gotten into was I actually moved from, because remember, I started out performing. There was no intention with videos. I was posting on YouTube, everyone was. But I was posting on YouTube for the fun of it.
Yeah.
But I was getting into events. The first content I made was to get more private functions to book me.
Okay.
And then content took off. TikTok became a big thing.
Yeah.
And then I started working with brands. So now I became an influencer in a way. So I was just advertising for brands. Then I thought, okay, should I stop the magic videos entirely and just do that for fun? Like, you know, because the real way that I enjoy that is if I'm at a bra and someone says, hey, can you show us a trick or so? I didn't feel like I have to now make videos because it became, pressure. It felt like a job.
Mm.
But I still enjoy it. But I mean, then, YouTube Shorts came along and that was where all the money was at. And then I started enjoying making the videos again and blasting them out there. But yeah, I think now with we're doing this show called Your Path to Viral, where we help other people grow their social medias, just telling them the story behind it. That's where I see it going in the future.
Okay.
So I think you always just have to look at what are people looking for now.
Yeah.
Where and that's the thing. If you're going to do something on social media that's viral for 2 weeks, hoping on a trend and your trend is like doing good, those things are usually short-lived.
Yeah.
And I feel for those people because, they get this high. It happened to me many times and then it just doesn't happen anymore. But I think you just always have to reinvent and think of other ways. Then I wouldn't entirely rely on just being an influencer.
Yeah.
I would also, partner with brands, of course, and look at what they want and how I can help them. Because you never know, right? If your content's strong and you have a strong brand, like, I always say, like you were talking about the girls earlier, if people watch you purely because of the way you look,
yeah,
that's good. Like you can keep this career up probably forever, right? But if you're like someone hopping on a face paint trend,
yeah,
and it's over 2 weeks, maybe you've grown a million followers, but then people just forget about you.
Yeah, you got to evolve. No, we actually had no one really helping us when we started the Bioscope because all the independent cinemas, at least in Joburg, had all long since closed. And so we found one or two. There was one guy in particular, who had a history of being involved in these kinds of spaces. And the one thing we got from him was, you got to keep reinventing.
Mm.
You got to keep re-energizing and you got to keep reinventing yourself. And I just remember that really stuck with us, which was like, you can't, if it works well, ride it as long as you can, but you're going to have to come up with a new event or a new thing or a new concept or a new idea to keep the space energized. And so that's interesting.
That's very true, because if you look at the biggest artists in the world, they're always changing their hairstyles, the type of music they're singing. So I'm not an expert at that, but it does feel to me as well like people get bored.
No, sure. And even if you're the greatest artist in the world, by the sort of fourth album, you have to do something different.
Justin Bieber's now changed his Instagram, I think, to Lil Bieber.
Okay.
Right? So, I mean,
I'm not keeping up, but that makes sense. Because after a while, like,
it's like, okay, it's Justin Bieber. Like, people are cruel, right? So like, totally. But I always say, like, the way I looked at it, because people would always be scared, like, how do I reinvent? But the way I look at it is, this is a blessing, right? Like, if you get 5 years of being the biggest artist in the world, and then you think of, okay, how can I keep this? Of course, that's the way to look at it business wise, but I think everyone wants to keep it going.
No, of course.
But like, rather take the blessing. If you're like this massive sports star.
No, of course. No, the sports is a good example because you can just literally only do it for so long.
Yes.
But a few folks that are, you know, the one-hit wonders, they just go, well, I'll take the one.
Of course.
It's of course we wish to have a second single that was as big as the first. But the fact that I got the one and that like I can live for the rest of my life off this one song.
You know,
what a blessing. I had a great chance to hang out with the band Wheatus.
Oh, yeah.
You know, who sang Teenage Dirtbag.
Yes.
And they just had such a lovely philosophy. The dude was like, yeah, we just, you know, we're grateful for all the success. And just in their heads, they were like, well, I guess next year we'll do something else. We'll, you know, one day it'll die. And they're just like, it's never died. And they were like, you know, you keep thinking like, well, you know, it was a good run. And then, like, the guy said, like, One Direction cover them in, like, a concert. And then they go to number one again. And then it's like, okay, well, I guess we're still around. And they just keep going.
Especially with TikTok that keeps bringing these old huge hits up. I love that song, by the way. I still listen to that a lot.
It's a great song. And they came at the right pace at the right time. And everything. You say the kind of film you could settle down with, which is our sort of last great love. You said anything by Will Ferrell,
yes.
Which I think is lovely, and there's obviously so much to him. What I love about Will Ferrell, and I thought I'd point this out in terms of performance, in case it's something you maybe haven't realized, is that he actually plays himself very straight and very serious.
Mm.
So there's so much comedy in him not being comedic.
Yes,
which I think is probably the most
genius
part of it.
Yeah, look, since about grade 10, I'd say I started watching his movies.
What are some of the favorites?
I think number one is Eurovision.
Interesting.
For long, it was The Campaign. I love that because, again,
that's also not like an obvious Will Ferrell movie.
And the thing is, he like you said, he makes you really feel like he's like this normal guy going through all these bad things.
But, I mean,
and the way he reacts, and he just loses it all of a sudden.
Ricky Bobby. Like Talladega Nights, Step Brothers.
So yeah, of course. All of them were very, very nice. I love Step Brothers. I love Blades of Glory.
Blades of Glory was
great. These were before my time, but I watched them later and I loved them. But when I was in high school, the movies that came out was like Get Hard, The Campaign, Daddy's Home. But I would say Get Hard, The Campaign and Eurovision. Those were great. Like, I just love the way, I think he's a genius. To me, I remember he won an award, the Comedic Genius Award at some award show. And I thought, to me, he really, but the things you have to get him. Like a lot of people, if I say that, they'll say, oh, no, I don't like Will. It's like, I feel like, you know, I don't want to dish him because he'll probably never hear me luckily say this, but I feel that way about Jim Carrey. Like when I see his movies, I don't get it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I get he's very physical with his comedy and stuff. But I've noticed the way I feel about Jim Carrey, a lot of other people feel about Will Ferrell. Like they're just like,
totally.
Oh, it's common. Like, I don't like it. But for me, he's such a genius because he went on a talk show where he was like this animal expert.
So you
never know what you're getting with him. And he's so believable with it. Like,
but it's the straight man commitment to that character.
Yeah.
But there's something I want to, and this is why I was looking down to Google. There's a film called Stranger Than Fiction that he acts in. Have you seen that?
I haven't seen it. What year was that?
This is 2006.
Okay.
It is such a smart It's such a great movie. It's got Emma Thompson in it. Do you know who Emma Thompson is?
Maybe if I see a photo.
Yeah, a famous British actress.
Okay.
It's got Maggie Gyllenhaal in it, who's Jake Gyllenhaal's sister.
Okay.
But he, it's a very smart movie. It's very well written.
It's still a comedy. So.
It's a comedy. It allows him to still be Will Ferrell, but he's the stakes and the movie is a little more art house and it's a little more serious. So the movie starts with him being this kind of normal guy. He sort of like works for the IRS, so that's like SARS. And he's got to audit this person, but he's very boring, straight-laced, by the book, brushes his teeth a certain amount of times, got this routine. And when he has to audit Maggie Gyllenhaal's sort of more hippie, free love, flowing cafe, he kind of falls in love with her. But there's this beautiful narration that all of a sudden he hears. So it's like a little bit artistic and fantastical, where he goes, what? Like, I can hear this narrator talking about him. His name is Harold Frick. He goes, why can I hear I can hear this narration. That's so odd. And then he discovers that he's the character of a person's book. So he goes to Dustin Hoffman, famous Dustin Hoffman, who's a literary professor, to say, I hear this narration. It's like I'm a character in a book. And so then Dustin Hoffman doesn't skip a beat. He goes, well, we got to figure out what story you're in. Okay. Are you in a comedy? Are you in a tragedy? What's going to happen to you?
That's a genius
plot. It's such a good movie. It's one of those that like just slipped a little under the radar of most people.
Yeah, I never heard of it. I'd love to definitely check it out.
Okay, but especially if you're a fan of Will Ferrell, because it's him with just a little more chops.
Mm.
It's him a little bit like when Adam Sandler was in Punch Drunk Love, where the whole world was like, oh, you're not just Happy Gilmore.
Mm.
Like, you have a little bit more substance to you.
Yeah.
So in you also saying, I don't want to just be a magician.
Mm.
It's cool to see these characters and these actors and these performers evolve.
Yeah,
and try these other things and push the boundaries of what it means to be a performer.
Because I've noticed that in their world as well. Because when you watch Eurovision, you know the scene where he's in the hamster wheel.
I haven't seen that.
Okay.
I've been to Iceland though.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah, yeah.
So I don't want to spoil anything, but there's a scene where everything goes horribly wrong. And he's did the same thing in Blades of Glory.
Okay.
When they were dancing on the thing and then the dance goes wrong. And I thought, when I saw that, I was like, huh, so these guys also, they go for their hits, right? So they know, if this worked 10 years ago, let me try it again. It's like same for me. If a magic trick goes viral, then I'm like, let's try something similar.
Sure.
So it's interesting to see them at that level still do the same thing.
No, of course.
And what I love about him, which he does very, very well, I used to think like a movie is more scripted than it actually is. So I would think it's like line for line, all of this. And then you see guys like him stand there and in the moment he'd think of something and he just speaks.
Some of them allow for it. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's why, because I always found it fascinating. How is he the same person in almost all his movies if someone else is writing the script?
Mm.
And then you realize it's just his input and the things that he sometimes does, because he would sit there and then they just film for 10 minutes and then he'd think of something to say, like, he's now busy complaining about something, then he'd throw these random things that he's saying.
Often they do the scripted version first, and then they go, okay,
let's see what you've
got. One or two others. You'll find this interesting that, I think it was an interview with Robin Williams. The interview was with a guy called Chris Columbus, who's a very famous director, and he was talking about working with Robin Williams, where on a movie like Mrs. Doubtfire, they did two takes of the script. And then it was like, cool, now you go two or three times. Let's see what happens. Maybe you have a better version. And he said in one or two occasions, when they asked him to repeat it, Robin Williams said, I have no idea what I did.
Like, really?
It just happened.
Just went for it.
But he went into some kind of mode where he's like, I don't know what I did. I don't know what I said. Kieran Culkin is the same. The guy who won the Oscar for Best Supporting Actor in forget the movie, he also just was like, I've got no idea what I'm doing, like, I'm just gonna do it, I'm gonna wing it, I'll try it again, I'll get as close to what I maybe did, but he has no idea what he remembers.
But didn't
A Real Pain, the movie's called A Real Pain.
Okay. But didn't Margot Robbie in where she says, "What are you, an owl?"
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Wasn't that scene also like they said like
maybe one or two lines? Yeah,
yeah. And it blew up.
Who? What are you fucking? Yeah, owl? Yeah.
And I think they, I think
it's such a great line.
I think they also said like it was on the spot or something. There was something about it. I don't know.
No, these moments exist, and there are these famous moments when.
Yeah, I mean, Will Ferrell is a good example. You know, in the movie Elf, where he walks in New York City in the streets, and everyone's around him, and he goes crazy, does these crazy things. That was real. I saw that the other day. They said because they couldn't, you know, block off that space.
Yeah, so they just let him and go.
They just let him do that anyway. The Santa scene or something.
Okay, that
I makes think
sense.
It was real, like those people's reactions and so. So interesting to hear, you.
Lovely. What's the next big sort of phase or stage for you? What are you involved in? What are you excited about at the moment?
So I really.
Or you could also be excited about not doing much at the moment.
No. For me, I have a clear path. Like for the last, I would say 2 years ago, for those last 2 years, so from around 2021 to 2022, I was just focused on growing this as big as I can. But the last 2 years, because I'm very fortunate, it's the biggest it's been, but I also want to do more with it.
Sure.
So something that I find a lot of value in, I got a lot into online business. So I really want to help other people do the same thing.
Okay.
Because I know that everyone in a way, I mean, you guys are doing it right here, like using content to take what you're already doing and making something big of it. That's why I was so grateful for the for Stokinico to reach out for me for the series where we're basically doing that. That's something I would like to grow over the next few years.
And what's that series?
Your Path to Viral.
And Stokinico, it's their show?
Yeah, they're showing it in the cinema. So 4 episodes, and then people can watch it that way.
What, it'll play before movies?
No. It'll be there on its own. They're advertising it after the movies, but you can go buy a ticket, watch the show, and so. So that's happening probably.
That they're creating their own content.
Yeah, interesting, eh?
Yeah, smart.
And so very fortunate for that. But that's the direction I kind of see it going. Like, you know, when you say you want to help people, it sounds like the corniest thing. But I always say, like, there's a guy who said there's a book called this, I think The Second Mountain or something, where he said like the first mountain is it's all about you making a name for yourself. That's why I said to you, like, I also wanted the fame. I also wanted to walk into a place and people say, do you know who that is? Like, I love that feeling. But then they say the second mountain is, you know, you kind of want to spread it around. Yeah. And I always thought people always just say that. But the day that I took my dad to the World Cup and I came back, and the day I went to Japan with my girlfriend, when we got back, that's when I realized, like, you know, this my life has now changed from this.
And all of that was paid for
from what I've made,
by what you've done, yeah.
And then I realized, like, you know, there's people, because people always come up to me and they're like, they just want to quit their jobs. Yeah. You know, they want to do something for their family. And then I'm like, you know, I love making magic trick videos, but I've also been doing it for a while.
Yeah.
So I'm going to continue to do it because, you know, it's what pays the bills. But at the end of the day, I also feel like, you know, there's more that I can do. And if I can change people's lives, I think there's a better purpose to that than simply to entertain them, which I still enjoy. I think it puts a smile on people's faces.
Yeah.
But I think there might be more to this.
But I just think you obviously are this great blueprint, being someone who was in the right place at the right time to build an actual career out of this medium. And really take it seriously. And it's the kind of thing that any kid born today is going to grow up in a world where this is a job.
Mm.
You know, it used to be like the fireman, policeman, you know.
Yeah.
It was these sort of quite clear, like, sort of job boxes. And now this is one of those jobs where it's like, you can be this person.
Yeah, it fascinates me that kids look, or it fascinates me that people look at your social media and they go, oh, I can't do this. But it's like, I did this at a time when it was crazy. Yeah. Now everyone, you know, they're getting millions of views. I would have to seriously think of someone who hasn't, you know, gotten a million views who takes social media seriously. It happens, right? If you post enough, if you put out, it's no longer that thing that, I mean, I talked earlier about how the first million views I got, like, changed my life. Yeah. Now you get a million views and you're like, okay, let's try again tomorrow, right? Like, people do it all the time. So I think people have become to see this can be a real career. And I think what appeals to them is the fact that they don't have to do a job which they hate, or you know, look, I think there's still a lot of hard work with it, but
there is. But it doesn't feel as hard.
No, if you're doing something that makes you feel like you have purpose and that you care about, I don't think it's about doing something you love, sure, but I think it's doing something you care about.
No, and I think that's the difference when you talk about fame and what you're after. you know, it's not just about being famous. If that is your end goal, then you will fall short. But you know, there's a lot more to it, which is a love for entertaining people. There's a love for magic and what it can bring.
No, absolutely.
And the challenging of that.
Yes.
So yeah, lovely, man.
No, that was great chatting to you guys. I'll check out that movie, by the way, from Will Ferrell.
So Stranger Than Fiction. Some of the early Sam Raimi will be a fun watch. It's like the kind of ridiculous sort of horror, but also very inventive. This is someone a little bit like you in small town Free State. It's like you make do with what you got. And so his early filmmaking, this is Sam Raimi, is playing with the budget that he has, doing what he loves, doing what he's passionate about. And you can see it because it built that career for him.
That's interesting. So, yeah, I think a lot of people would also maybe think like, what about the Now You See Me movies, right?
Yeah.
But I don't know if you've noticed, like anyone who does something, like it's their whole life, it's taken over their whole life. Usually they're not, I love those movies, but I mean, usually you're not the biggest fan of the movie. Because you kind of see now the theatrical side of it, which is great for any other movie. But in the thing that you do, you're kind of like, no, that doesn't happen. You know what I mean?
It's like
a serious Formula One fan. Like a lot of them, they don't like Drive to Survive because they're more into the actual sport of it. Maybe, I've noticed that. But I do like the Now You See Me movies. I'm excited for the new one to come out.
Yeah, I was about to say there is one later.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm sure someone's going to send you some emails about doing some kind of thing or launch event.
We did that for David Blaine's new series.
Yeah,
that's when
I saw you. I didn't have enough time to. I had to duck out during it. But that's a great show.
Yeah,
I
loved
that show, and that was also him pushing himself to the next phase.
What's nice is he. That's why I say like there's so many different directions, and there's people like the word magician. Like, what does that even mean? Because he, you know, is he a magician? I don't think so, because he does magic tricks, but he does a lot of stuff that no other magician does.
Yeah, and he's taken it further. So the show is Do Not Attempt, and there's a lovely episode of South Africa, but it's him traveling around the world, learning from other people and trying to understand and challenge himself. So like sitting with the Black Mambas and
if
the India episode's amazing, the Brazil, they're all quite something. So that's on Disney Plus.
Yeah. If people ask me, like, because I get this question a lot, like who's the best magician in the world? Like, who do you think's the best? I mean, I looked up to the guys who no one knows, you know, the guys behind the scenes making everything and so. But if I have to answer, because obviously if you reached fame, you know, that's a job in and of itself. I say David Blaine. Like, because I wasn't necessarily like inspired of from his tricks and so, but I mean, the guy took it and he made it something so big.
It's actually he's become more of an endurance artist.
Yeah,
and he's actually shown the world like how exactly you can do certain things. Like a podcast episode with him when he explained like his hunger strikes. Well, not hunger strike, but I mean the hunger challenge where he wasn't eating for so long and what that was like. The hardest part of that, funny enough, wasn't the fact that he wasn't eating. He said you get over the hunger and then you deal with the crazy hallucinations of sitting in this room. The hardest part was actually eating again once it was all over. Because your stomach, you can't just have a meal. Your stomach has shrunken and your body's started like eating itself. So that if the moment you put anything in your stomach, like you'd be like violently like in pain.
That's crazy.
And so how he had to sort of do that, and he said he innocently like had a few potato chips and he's like I had the most incredible pain.
That's crazy.
And also him talking about like there's that one trick where he puts the frog in his stomach
and he really does that,
and also the water, and a lot of it is about taking in the water, and he said holding the water in his stomach was one of the sorest, most painful things he's ever done.
That's crazy.
And you think it would be burning yourself and you know, putting nails
starvation
to your hand or anything like that. But no, it was holding water in his stomach.
Yeah, and I think the thing that I admire about him, because I don't do those like grueling things, right? But I still admire what he does.
It's
a
different kind of magic.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think being able to reinvent yourself is something that a lot of celebrities try. And he's one of the very few who's done it, especially when you've been a magician for so long. To get people to believe when you're now saying, okay, I'm underwater holding my breath, everyone would just automatically think, oh, it's just a magic trick.
Yeah.
But he somehow convinced the whole world, like, Yes, I'm a magician, but I'm actually now doing this stuff.
The scary part of his show is that so much of it is real. But
yes.
Yeah.
But no, that's interesting.
Lovely, man. Listen, thank you for your time.
No, thanks for having me.
Thank you for popping into our video store and your visit. I'm glad that we finally got around to doing it.
Yeah, no, 2 years, eh?
Yeah. No, but it's lovely to hear your story. It's lovely to understand the hard work and the dedication that came through it. And magic is definitely one of those things. It's a little bit like being a drummer. There's a certain amount of, you know, natural talent, but a lot of it is just
putting in the reps, yeah.
Putting in the reps. And you've certainly done that. And I think it's so great to just see all the success. So here's to a lifetime of happiness with all the things that you're doing. And just grow from strength to strength. And I'll see you down the line.
Thanks, Russell. I appreciate it. And yeah, again, thanks for having me on. We'll definitely chat again.
Cool. Cheers, man. All right.
Yeah.
Lekker chat.
Yes.
Wholesome guy.
Definitely.
I just love the fact that in the small little town in South Africa,
yeah,
you can go from there to be this kind of world famous dude. And it just, yeah, the subtext, which I think we touched on throughout, is just the fact that you work really fucking hard.
Yes.
Like, I think so often those that have found the success will have, you know, these kind of seminars or think that they can kind of help other people do it.
Yeah.
And I'm sure they can offer very valuable advice, but the main thing is like just work really hard.
Exactly, yeah.
So yeah, it was great having him on and great proving also that our way of talking works.
Yes.
Where the films that they've loved say so much about
them. Yeah, it gives you proper insight into people.
Yeah, and you sort of wonder which comes first. You know, the film that inspired you to be that, or you were always that, and then that's why you loved that film.
Mm-hmm.
But it's nice drawing the parallels.
Exactly.
Should we get into a little bit of chatting?
Let's do it.
Okay. We always like to kick off the usual episodes with something called "Hey, did you guys see?"
Yes,
which is a nice, quick way to scan through the news of the week.
Mm-hmm.
I'd love to start with, "Hey, did you see the trailer for Wuthering Heights?"
Oh yes, I did.
Hey,
yeah,
fucking hell.
Yes,
what a trailer!
It's the first comment I saw called it 50 Shades of Hey.
it looks delightful. Interesting. It looks concentrated.
Yeah.
This is an adaptation of a very famous book.
Yeah.
Which I know nothing about, and I want to between now and February, because this is scheduled for a Valentine's Day.
That makes sense.
We've got Margot Robbie and Jacob Elordi.
Yeah.
Like two of the prettiest fucking humans on the planet.
Yes.
And they're going to romp in hay.
Right.
Because as you said, it's a sort of farming stable boy, Renaissance period, fucking what?
Exactly.
No, but it looks brooding. It looks intense.
Yeah,
and it looks like it's at the helm of someone who really knows what they're doing, which is Emerald Fennell.
Okay.
Fennell. How do you pronounce her surname?
Yeah.
She shocked the world with that movie that came on Amazon, Saltburn.
Oh yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So
okay,
she's the Saltburn person.
Yes.
And that just got, I just love what Saltburn did. It took like a really interesting, bold, quite evocative art house film.
Yes.
And stuck it in front of normies and everyone lost their mind.
Yes.
And we're like, yeah, this is the weird shit that happens every year.
Yes.
You just don't go out to cinemas to watch it. But when it's given to you on Amazon and it sneaks up on you.
Exactly.
Then and then you realize like how good it can be.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, real interesting.
Yeah, definitely.
Cool.
Hey, did you see? We have the announcement for the sequel, not sequel, to Superman.
Mm.
Yes, Man of Tomorrow will be out on 9th of July 2027.
Okay, is the Supergirl one happening before?
Yes.
Okay.
So Supergirl is next year. 2026.
Oh, and then this is 2027.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez. I can't even imagine what's going to happen in 2027.
Right.
Do you think there'll still be an economy?
Who's to say?
Not
in America, there won't be.
Yeah, Christ. They have unquestionably the most biggest, powerful, and mighty economy.
Oh, yeah.
Always had. Like, yes. Streets ahead of everyone else.
Yeah.
And someone was like, let's make America great again. It's like, you're pretty great. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like,
you were there.
You pretty much had it all.
Yes.
And, like, you didn't need the tariffs.
Yeah.
So that just made a problem where there wasn't. And you just, yeah, took what was a pretty together, somewhat divided,
yes,
but pretty together group of people and just split them in the middle.
And just set it all on fire.
And I sort of, at one point, I played golf with my dad yesterday. I was like, do you think this Charlie Kirk guy is going to be the Franz Ferdinand of 2025? And he's like, I hope not. And then we wandered off on the golf course.
Yeah.
Bizarre. Okay, but yeah, Superman coming 2027.
Yeah,
it seems
like it's going to be a... Superman has to team up with Lex Luthor to fight something else. We don't know what.
Oh.
Yeah.
Cool. And it's our guy, our new guy.
What's his name? David Corenswet.
Corenswet.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. I like that movie. I know it wasn't your bag of tea.
No, I
almost said
it.
Bag of tea. That doesn't make sense. It wasn't your kettle of tea.
It wasn't my bag of chips.
Yes.
It wasn't my bag of dicks that I ate. No, I thought it was just fine.
Yeah.
I thought it was totally cool. I think I went in expecting something far more unique and great.
Right.
I sort of shot for the moon and I landed amongst the stars where I was like, this is just a superhero movie.
Right.
It's a good one, but it's just a superhero movie.
Okay.
It's like it's just guys in leotards fighting each other. Do you have other ones?
We haven't done one of these in a while, so a bunch of stuff has happened.
Okay, cool. No, you shoot.
Okay, cool. Hey, did you see we already got a trailer for 28 Years Later, The Bone Temple?
Okay.
Which is already out in January or February?
At least in South Africa.
Yes, which is interesting. Because I really liked that movie, the last one, 28 Years Later.
Okay, cool.
I think it's very solid and interesting. And this is same writer, different director.
Okay.
Which is interesting. And then, so this is Nia DaCosta, who did like the Candyman remake. She did the Marvels, which didn't do well, but it was actually pretty good. I like the Marvels in terms of modern Marvel movies.
Okay. The Marvels, what is her first good name?
Nia DaCosta.
Nia.
Yeah. NIA. Okay. And what's interesting, the one thing that I saw was an interview with her where she said she asked Alex Garland, who's the writer of both of these, like, what are these movies about? Like, give me like the theme of each of these films. What he said to her was the first movie, so 28 Years Later, which was directed by Danny Boyle, is about the nature of family.
Okay.
And then he said this one, the second one, is about the nature of cruelty, which is interesting.
Wait, the one that we just had?
Yeah. So 28 Years Later is, he said it's about the nature of family. Which will make sense if you've seen the movie.
Oh, okay. So sorry. I thought you were dialing back all the way to Days.
No. 28 years later.
Okay, so just in these new ones.
Two that they made like back to back.
Okay, family and then cruelty.
Yeah, I think it's going to be intense. Well, like, because there's people have spoken about this before. Like, the end of the other one is a bit jarring because it suddenly like kind of changes. Like, the ending is odd. Without giving it away, it introduces a bunch of new characters who aren't in the movie at all. So it introduces these characters that are going to be in the next one. They're a gang called the Jimmies.
Okay.
Who all dress like Jimmy Savile.
Who the fuck's Jimmy Savile?
He was a British children's entertainer who right after his death, they broke the story. He was like a massive sexual abuser.
Oh, shit.
Like abused literally like hundreds of people. But because he was like very famous and well-known, while like in his heyday, it was all like kept undercover.
That it all happened once he died.
Yes, and then somebody obviously had that information.
Abuse women,
kids mostly.
Oh God!
Yeah, because he was a children's entertainer, so he had access to kids all the time.
Oh fucking hell!
Yeah, proper piece of shit. Really terrible, terrible person. But of course,
I've heard of that.
But it's interesting, like in this world, so these all people who like kind of idolize him. Because in this world, the news never broke, right? Because a zombie thing happened in the UK, So that news never broke. So all these people who still think Jimmy Savile was like this wonderful children's entertainer, but then still in the movies about like cruelty. So they're going to work that in. I think that's interesting.
Okay. Might be very British.
Yes.
Because everyone is British. And
it's set in the UK. Yeah. And yeah, all the actors and characters are English.
Okay.
Yeah. It looks interesting. Well, what should we do next? Oh, this one makes me a little like, not sad. What's the right word?
Solemn.
Apprehensive. That's the word I'm looking for. Apprehensive. Because Fede Alvarez isn't going to be directing the sequel to Alien Romulus.
Okay.
Because he directed Alien Romulus.
All right.
And freaking killed it. Even though I didn't love that movie, like the problem wasn't with him. And he did a really, really good job.
Okay.
So apparently he said like the script is done. Like they're very happy with the script. Now they're looking for a new director.
Okay. Why can't he do it?
I think the idea is the way he phrased it was like traditionally each Alien film is directed by a different person.
That's quite a nice tradition.
You know, like the first one's Ridley Scott, the second one's James Cameron, the third one's David Fincher, that sort of thing. Mm. So they're like, okay, let's keep that going and like find a new, since we're going to continue this thing.
Yeah.
Let's like keep that going and get, like the only person who's directed multiple films in that franchise is Ridley Scott.
Okay.
Who's still producing this as well.
Okay.
So, you know. I don't know. I don't know what to make of that one, but I'm still excited about that movie. Hopefully it'll be good.
Cool.
This is interesting. Did you see the trailer for House of Dynamite?
No.
So this is Catherine Bigelow's new movie.
Okay.
Catherine Bigelow, who did...
Zero Dark Thirty.
Yeah, Zero Dark Thirty, The Hurt Locker, Point Break.
Yeah.
Very, very good director.
One of only three women.
Yeah, you've won Oscar for Best Director. You know, formerly married to James Cameron. Mm. Lucky woman. But this is very much in her wheelhouse. She does like political thriller kind of things. And we've just got a teaser trailer for it. So it's a Netflix movie. So I don't know if it'll be in theaters or not. But it seems like the premise is someone has like fired some like intercontinental missiles at the US and they don't know where it's come from.
Okay.
So now it's this like paranoia thing of like, who did this? Where's it come from? We need to figure this out. And like the like DEFCON, like the level of alert that America's at is just like increasing, increasing, increasing because they don't know where it's come from, and if it's going to happen again.
Okay.
You know, it looks pretty good. It looks pretty good, yeah.
Okay.
I like her movies.
Do you have any idea when it might arrive?
I can look. I think it's not too long away.
Okay. House of Dynamite.
House of Dynamite.
Okay.
It is the 2nd of September, 2025. The initial release, I think maybe it's screened at like festivals or something, but I don't think it's actually on Netflix yet. There you go, 24th of October.
Okay.
Will be the release date.
Cool.
So it's screened for some, it's screened somewhere or other.
Yeah.
Yeah, but still, it looks good. I'll put up the trailer in the thing. And then we also got a trailer here, did you see, for Wake Up Dead Man?
Yes, that looks real interesting.
Yeah, part of the... I always forget Knives Out. Yeah,
so this is Rian Johnson.
Yes.
Who I think anyone who is interested should dial back to a film like Brick.
Yes.
Which is one of his first films. Yeah. It really got him on the map, which is Joseph Gordon-Levitt. It was a very cool, like, little indie darling.
Yeah, tiny little movie.
Tiny, tiny movie. Such a great example of what a smart first film could be for a filmmaker.
Yeah.
To play within their means. So it's this noir mystery that's set in a high school where everyone speaks as if the stakes are huge.
Yes.
But it's just about this missing person in a high school.
Yeah.
And it's lovely.
Yeah.
Then he went on and did many things. He did a Star Wars film.
Yeah, he did The Last Jedi.
Which I thought was cool.
I love The Last Jedi.
And then Knives Out is great. I love it when you can see a new version of a franchise appear.
Yeah.
And so we've got Benoit Blanc,
Love him.
Which is Daniel Craig.
Doing a hell of an accent.
Yeah, being a sort of Poirot-esque detective.
Yeah.
And the first one was in a sort of classic Cluedo-looking mansion. Mm. And after the success of the first Knives Out, he was like, why don't we see all the other mysteries that he goes on to solve? The second one was a very high-stakes, modern... quite like tech billionaire futurist looking version. with Edward Norton, which was cool. And now we're in the third one, which is Wake Up Dead Man, which apparently has like one of the biggest budgets.
Well,
of a movie coming out recently, like it almost feels a bit unnecessarily big. It's like over 200 million.
The thing is, Rian Johnson made a deal with Netflix to make more of these films, where they basically paid his production company upfront $400 million.
Oh.
So they basically like bought these movies and were like, go fund these movies, $400 million, there you go. So who knows how much these movies actually cost? I think that's the thing. We don't know how much the movies actually cost, but Netflix paid $400 million for these two movies, which is nuts.
Okay.
But I'm sure it does help with the thing of they have like ridiculous costs.
Cool.
With big name actors.
And I think those do take the biggest chunks.
Yeah, those take big chunks. And like they have to pay them more for streaming movies because they don't get residuals from cinemas.
Maybe they put out some tenders to a bunch of South African companies.
Yes.
And that's why everything is just so expensive. Fuck's sakes. No, okay, interesting. What is our premise for Wake Up Dead Man?
I'm not sure, actually. I know
where are we set?
They've said it's very... They said this one, because each one is kind of like playing in a different space in like the mystery kind of genre. This one is very Edgar Allan Poe.
Yeah, this one looks a bit gothic-y.
Like, yes, it's a little gothic, a little like spooky, you know. They kind of did the same thing with the Kenneth Branagh's movies, where the third one was like a little more like... Yeah. Horror vibe.
Yeah.
Like that each one kind of plays in a slightly different space. Yeah. It feels intentional.
Cool.
But I like these movies. I think Knives Out is phenomenal.
It is good.
It is such a good movie.
It is good. And it also just shows the simplicity, but how the certain timeless storytelling will always work.
Yes.
Like a good old whodunit.
Yes. And how like just like your writing is everything.
Yes.
It is everything for a good movie. It's such a well-written film.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, you want to talk about some awards?
Yeah, let's do it.
Some awards for some films. Let me bring up...
Well, I saw, to start with TV, that Adolescence got a lot of love last night.
Definitely did, for Emmys. Limited series.
Which is good. I think we all saw that coming. It was like the baby reindeer of this year. But it's just cool that it deserves it and it got it.
Yeah. Well, let's run through some categories quickly. Yeah. So Best Drama Series went to The Pit, which I've heard very good things about.
Okay,
it's like a medical drama. I think it's like real time. Like it takes place in an emergency room. It's spoken about like a spiritual successful to ER.
Okay.
So it's got like the same lead guy, Noah Wyle.
Okay.
He's like the lead in this. And I think it was originally pitched as a sequel to ER.
Okay.
But then they kind of like whoever owns those rights or something didn't follow through with that. So like, okay, let's just rework it into a new thing.
Okay.
And it's called The Pit. Apparently it's excellent. Best Comedy went to The Studio, which is great. That's a great show.
Nice.
Studio is an excellent show. Best Limited obviously went to Adolescence, like we just said.
Yeah.
I still haven't watched it, but I've heard it's excellent.
It's grueling, but it's good.
Yes, this is what I've heard. I'm just going to like highlight once. Best Actor, Noah Wyle in The Pit.
Okay.
He's that guy from ER. You probably recognize him when you see him. Best actress in a drama went to Britt Lower from Severance, another show I've never watched.
Okay. Yeah.
Best supporting actor, also Severance, Tramell Tillman. So I don't know who these people are.
Tramell.
Yeah, Tramell Tillman.
Okay. Yeah. I know who that is.
Best
supporting
actress, Catherine Lanessa in The Pit. I don't know who these people are.
Yeah.
Best actor in a limited series went to Stephen Graham in Adolescence. Yeah,
very deserved.
Yeah, I've heard he's very good in that. Best actress went to Christina Milotti from The Penguin.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Yeah, her performance was getting very a lot of praise and recognition.
Yes.
So good for her.
It's interesting seeing like stuff like super quote-unquote superhero stuff. I know The Penguin kind of plays in a different space. But stuff like The Penguin and Andor winning awards at the Emmys feels like... It feels unusual, you know, for genre pieces like that to win stuff.
Yeah, this Pit show sounds like a perfect made for Emmy.
Exactly.
Show.
Exactly. Best actress in a comedy series, Jean Smart for Hacks. I see Hacks won a bunch of awards. I've never even heard of it.
I don't
know what it is.
No, I started watching it. We watched season one of it. It's cool. It's fun. It's a woman who's older and sort of had a great career in showbiz. I think she's a comedian.
Okay.
And it's about the relationship between her and a young sort of assistant intern.
Okay.
Who like looks after her and writes material for her.
Right. Okay.
And it's like at the first season's in Vegas. I don't know whether it moves.
Right. Okay. But it's where is it?
I want to say Showmax.
Okay, that might be why I've never heard of it. I don't know.
Yeah, Showmax. I think it's an HBO thing.
Right. Okay. Best actor in a comedy series, Seth Rogen for The Studio. He's really, really good in that. I'm trying to like pick ones that we're interested in. This is interesting. Best writing for a drama series, Dan Gilroy for Andor.
Cool.
Andor won for best drama writing. That's nuts that a Star Wars show has won best drama writing. It's fascinating.
Yeah.
But good, because that's the thing that like, if it was like, oh, this is like the good Star Wars. Star Wars is good now. It's like, what is becoming more and more apparent, and I think people are realizing, and studios are hopefully realizing this as well, with like big spectacle movies, a lot of big spectacle movies not doing well.
Yeah, because the spectacle's over.
Exactly. We're all like numb to it now because we've seen everything.
Yeah.
So the thing that people want is just like good movies and good shows, and that all comes down to writing.
Yeah.
This is why you've seen stuff like Sinners doing really well.
Yeah.
You know, and now Andor doing really well.
Yeah. No, and you know? when they started old Tom Holland
as
Spider-Man, that first one was just set in like a little neighborhood.
Yeah.
It wasn't the fucking whole world.
Yes.
Doesn't have to be about the whole fucking world. It can just
every
be about
time,
just him trying to make Matric dance.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, that's it.
Yes. Small problems are fine if they're well written. Best writing for limited series, Adolescence. Again, apparently well deserved. And then best writing for a comedy series, The Studio, which is great. And then they had a separate series,
Wasn't this one going to have podcasting for the first time, or was that Golden Globes?
I think that might be Golden Globes.
I think it was Golden Globes, yeah.
I think that's Golden Globes. Best directing for a comedy, Seth Rogen.
Okay.
I don't actually know he directed any of those episodes. Yeah. And then best directing for a limited series was Adolescence as well. And then they had a separate one, which was all the technical awards.
Yeah.
Which I don't know much about that, but I know Andor won best editing, best visual effects, costume design, and production design, I think.
That's cool.
Yeah, but if you want to look at everything, obviously I'll include a link down below. You can go see all the winners from both ceremonies.
Magic.
Yeah.
Yeah, lekker, man.
Nice.
Cool. Thank you for listening thus far.
Yeah.
One little special mention.
Yes.
Is a movie called The Threesome.
Okay.
Which is coming out soon.
Yes.
It's one of these little indie darlings that are going to fly under the radar. But if you gotten to this part of the episode and you're still listening, I would just love to bring it to your attention. It's such a fun, smart, romantic comedy that just embodies the sort of craziness and the messiness of 2025.
Okay.
These guys, our main character sort of really loves this one girl.
Okay.
But they're a bit on and off, and they can't quite make it work. But eventually one night they hook up, but they hook up with another girl.
Right.
And so they have this threesome. And it comes out afterwards that both girls are pregnant.
Right.
and it's about that. But
okay.
That on its own sets up what should be a sort of stupid American Pie-esque Ryan Reynolds-y film from the noughties.
Exactly.
But it's not that.
Okay, good.
It's a far more subtle, nuanced, really charming film.
Okay, nice. I hadn't even heard about it until you brought it up.
Yeah, no, earlier. it's gonna fly under the radar just because it's just that small. But
right.
I saw it coming. I see the lobby is also taking it, so I was like, ooh, okay, I'm interested.
Nice.
Watched it and was like, this is really charming.
Okay.
It's really great. And so, like, it will be included in the Bioscopes program.
Cool.
And it's worth your time.
Okay.
All right. So, yeah, thanks. Homebase is thevideostore.co.za.
Yep.
We got some links to other guest episodes there.
Mm.
Folks similar to Vian. I think someone like Donovan Goliath is a good example.
Okay.
That uses comedy in the way in which Vian uses magic.
Yeah.
And that Boa Bosch is also a good example of guys that have created their own production companies effectively out of this. And are using these tools that we have in 2025 to build these incredible careers for themselves.
Yeah.
So I think that's interesting. All right. Lekker. Thank you, my G-Force.
Yeah, no problem, bro.
Okay, I'll see you soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye.